Before we start, quick announcement. The Podnuts Network is still for sale at Flippa.com. Just do a search for Podnuts. The auction ends September 1st at midnight. So go ahead and check it out. Welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us 101. I feel like we're teaching a course. But no, that is the episode number. And we've come a long way. This is the second Podnuts show that has made it into the hundreds. So that's an accomplishment, I think. Let me just talk about what we do on the show, and I'll introduce the co-host. What we do here is we talk about Linux. It's pretty much like the title says, but we kind of try to make it digestible and fun. And, you know, if you are thinking about getting into Linux and using it, then this is a great show for you because we cover applications, news, how to use Linux, how to get started with Linux, Linux commands. It's pretty much all over the place. But this show is designed to help you become more confident in Linux and be a better Linux user. Let me introduce the co-host who brings the goods and does most of the enlightening of the show, where I just ask a question here and there. It's the door-to-door geek, Steve McLaughlin from door-to-doorgeek.com. What's up, Door?
Hey, man. I'll say we're all over the place because I'm quite ADHD.
It's good. It gives variety. Not ADHD is good. Your variety is good.
Yes.
Keeps it interesting. Keeps it interesting.
Absolutely. And it inadvertently keeps both of us on our toes.
Yeah, actually it does. Mm-hmm. It does. If anybody is watching the video, excuse the CyberLink UCAM logo. We're trying to debug some stuff on the Hangout. But other than that, the audio people shouldn't mind. So what are we doing today, Dor?
Oh, we're doing a bunch of stuff. First things first, patience, okay? I hate saying it like this. Because I was so OCD also when I was younger, my mother said the only virtue that I really excelled at was patience. And I will say I've been pretty good at that throughout my life, where I'm in no rush. I can wait. You know, when this gets done, it gets done. When this gets done, it gets done. No rush. I would like my football team to win a Super Bowl, but I'm patient. And I will say it's getting harder and harder with certain things. Like OLF is 45 days away. Or 6 weeks and 3 days.
Dude, if you're counting already, then you don't have patience.
I know. Well, it's partially because of, of course, the people I'm going to see. You know, everybody from Red Dwarf, Jeff Ellis, you, even Sean Johnsoni, Eric, and all the guys like Bruce Barr, who I never see except for that, or even really, you know, talk to except for that. I honestly have a feeling come Thursday evening to Saturday night, I'm going to wish there was two more days. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But since last week was the OLF brain dump, no more OLF this episode.
All right. That's fair.
Yeah. Well, people who cannot go or do not want to go, or it's just whatever, I don't want to, smother them.
You know? I think another 2 hours of OLF won't be smothering.
Well, maybe not right now.
You know, let's get back to patience, because I am a very impatient person. I don't understand how anybody can possibly have patience. I'm driving around today, and just people are just slow around me, you know, and in a drive-through, and they took a long time to order, and they took a long time to drive up to the speaker. I'm very impatient. I can't order anything online. I have to have it immediately. That's why I love Amazon Prime. Give me next day ordering for $4. You know, it's like I'm all about the impatience because it's slow. So I commend you for having that virtue. It's just not something I have.
Well, I'll say to a degree, I don't want to say it like this, but I almost have to. You almost have to not care. And really what I mean by that is you cannot be absolute about some things in life because they really are out of your control. And what I mean by that is, you know, driving. Whether or not this guy in front of me is going to make it through the intersection before the light turns red because he literally sat there for a minute while it was green. You can't let that kind of stuff get to you or you will literally, like, go ballistic and freak out and, you know, maybe end up getting arrested because, you know, that's not good.
Well, without getting philosophical, and I hear what you're saying, I take full use and advantage of my horn. Some people are afraid to beep their horn. They think it's rude. I consider it a wake-up call. When I hit my horn, everybody gets through that light. Mm-hmm. And I don't slam on my horn. It's like me tapping you on the shoulder saying, wake up, door.
Right. Well,
wake up.
I'm the guy that once in a while, I'm like this, looking to the side. What does that say? Does that say free bacon? And the light turns green while I'm looking at that. So I will say most of the time, I'm to a degree thankful, to a degree. Did you have to hold the horn down so long? Jeez, you know.
Oh yeah. See, I don't hold it down long.
Well, that's
I give a little happy toot. Wake up. That's how my horn sounds. Wake up.
Right. And when the people actually hold it down, that's when I just want to, you know, just sit there for another couple seconds.
Yeah. When they do that, that's just not right.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, let's get to some Linux stuff.
Okay. I want to first thank everybody because we don't mention this enough in my book. For coming out to the live show Tuesday evenings, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, podnuts.com/live. As always, a good bunch of people come out to the live show. I try to keep up with the chat. If I don't, you know, you can kill me later. I've already said this on two other shows now, I think, but I didn't give a Kickstarter completion, and I'm going to do that real quick. For everybody who already heard it, I'm sorry, but I gotta let the people know who didn't know, okay? The Kickstarter, it's done. Boom. Okay? I asked for $500. It ended up being $3,400.
Jeez.
Yeah. Exactly $3,402, because two people donated a dollar, or pledged a dollar.
Nice.
I don't know what that is, but yeah. A couple people did not want to, well, they wanted to use Kickstarter. I'll say the positive. They wanted to use PayPal, but Kickstarter doesn't accept PayPal. So they basically contacted me directly. I said, no problem. Go to doordoorgeek.com, click donate. Whatever you want to pledge, just say this is a Kickstarter pledge, and you will get the same perks that the Kickstarter people get. If I factor that into the equation, it's, I want to say, $3,800.
Wow.
Okay, then if I want to factor in what I think is fair market value of these two computers that I got as well, $5,800.
Really?
Well, I think they're about $1,000 a piece. They're brand new, top of the line. One has a 2 terabyte drive. One has an SSD drive. They both have 16 gigs of DDR3 RAM.
Damn. So you got 10 times more than what you wanted.
Yeah.
So you're going to get some nice equipment, and what are you going to do with the money?
I was going to go to Brazil and hang with some volleyball players, but...
Beach or indoor?
I'm not really picky. They're all hot. Well,
they won the gold.
Got the gold in my book. I will say a bunch of stuff I'm going to get. I'm going to try to document stuff as I do it. The first and foremost thing, the area I got to get set up, a desk. I'm actually going to go cheap on the desk for a couple reasons. A, so if I'm at a place and I need a hole in that desk for a cord, I don't have to worry about ruining the desk. I just take out a power drill and go right through it, and there's my hole for the cable. It's basically going to be a sheet of 3/4 inch plywood cut in half, folded over onto itself, glued, and with a veneer on top. After that, I want to get at least 1 to 2 good monitors so I can have good monitors there. I'm looking at getting a Logitech C910 webcam that says it can do 1080p video in Linux, because I want to do Android videos. I got a couple stupid Raspberry Pi accessories, which, you know, $10-$15. They're cheap. But I want to do Android videos, so I did already get one thing. And for the people watching the video, it is a Nexus 7 tablet.
Nice. It's beautiful.
Which I can tell you right now, there's no doubt in my mind, the developers behind Android, when they use this device, they say to themselves, yes, this is how it's supposed to run.
Really?
Everything, blink of an eye. Blink of an eye. Even when I'm at work and I tether through my phone, it is almost instantaneous to do anything.
Wow.
Whether it be open up Google Plus, the time I click Google Plus to have everything fully loaded in front of me, maybe 3/4 of a second to a second, and that's over 3G.
Sweet.
So it proves to me that what's slowing this phone down is not the 3G. It's the processor and the lack of a 12-core GPU. That's really slowing it down.
Jeez, that's crazy.
Yeah. I'm going to get this set I sent to Steve C., and I'm going to publish this too. A expandable up to 10 by 10 feet backdrop with three backdrops to it. One's white, one's black, one's green. And it has a couple lights. So, and lights with the umbrellas. So,
yeah.
Soft light.
Perfect. That's very cool, man.
Yeah.
I cannot wait.
Yeah. I don't want to say I'm taking it slow. I want to do things right. You know what I mean? The goal is to just do things right so I don't have to redo them over again. And I want to make sure that what I get will actually last a little bit. Like the webcam. I did a lot of looking into it. That webcam, its driver in Linux is part of a class of drivers that has been around for 8+ years, and as far as I know, has dropped very little support over the years for older hardware.
I got you. I was going to say, that's the one thing I would put a little bit more money in, is the camera. I would get like a Canon camcorder or something like that. I mean, unless you want to have something for streaming, but you're going to be recording this stuff. You don't need a webcam.
Well, I'll say this. The only reason I need it, is to look down and capture the tablet. And my logic is it has to be real time with the other camera, so they're both recorded at the same time. I don't know if a camcorder is overboard. You know what I mean?
Your quality, you're going to get the quality, though, of a good lens.
Well, I mean, it has to have the support in Linux. And that's what I have to research is, if it's FireWire, how's the FireWire support in Linux?
If you're recording videos, you don't have to stream. Record to an SD card. You know, it doesn't have to be a Linux compliant as far as streaming. Buy the webcam, use that for streaming. But when you're filming a video of a phone or a device, I would use a high quality camera with a good lens.
Well, but my logic is, like on my other videos, the bulk of the screen would be the tablet, but I would be in the bottom corner. That's why I keep thinking streaming it to the desktop. No?
Nah, I mean, we could talk about it after the show,
but
you record it in separate places like we do with the show, and then you merge it all together at the end.
Right.
Just getting the best quality on every one. I mean, use Camtasia to record your desktop, or whatever program, record your desktop, but if you're going to be recording something in the physical universe, I would get like a nice, I mean, don't go overboard, they make just a couple $100, but nice camcorder with a nice lens and good zooming and everything, and I think that would be good.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to. We'll talk because I need help with this. Because there are certain... Because honestly, the other reason I'm taking it slow and methodical is because I'm asking people that know more than me, because I don't know this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I just clearly don't. I was talking to you. I might upgrade the mic and the USB audio interface. It's not that they're bad, but I could see a definite improvement with those upgrades.
Yeah, more so than quality, just a number of ports you could plug stuff into, basically.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Right. And I will say the other thing, oh man, I'm trying to think. There's something else. Oh, because the last Thursday night, I'm getting a battery backup. So when I have a millisecond power outage, the computer doesn't turn off like it did on Android App Addicts.
Yeah. You know what? I was thinking about getting a battery backup myself, but since I haven't told anybody this, besides you probably, but I got a pretty kick-ass laptop, and I'm trying to use that as my only computer. That's basically a battery backup in itself.
Yeah.
When you pull the power, battery kicks in. So it's like, I don't have to buy one. Well, this is my logic.
And that's why I tell people when they ROM a phone, do not do it from a desktop computer. Do it from a laptop. So if your power goes out, there's no chance you're going to brick the phone.
Good call.
Yeah.
Good call.
Okay. Now we're going to get into the actual stuff. If people want to know the stuff I'm buying, honestly, Google Plus me or go to DoorDoorGeek.com. When things start falling into place and I start buying them, I will probably not tell people I bought it, but I'll tell people I got it and have pictures of it and show it off. Yeah.
Sweet.
Okay. To me, this first topic is important on a lot of different levels. And when I say important, it's important for me to get this word out, okay? Hacker Public Radio, okay? First off, if you're at work and you don't want to go to a site called Hacker Public Radio, I'm 99% sure if you go to Hobby Public Radio, it is a like mirror site.
Really?
Yeah, I know they were working.
Did they create that for that purpose?
Yeah, because they didn't want people at work to not be able to access the site. Let me try hobbypublicradio.com now.
I wouldn't even something else. I would call it like Office 2012 next spreadsheet or something like that.
Right. I will find that out and make sure it's in the net. Oh, hobbypublicradio.org. Let me try to access it one more time. Hobby, Hobby, Public Radio. It's working, okay. Hacker Public Radio, to me, is like, you know, we have all these other podcast networks out there, and I don't want to name names, but, you know, their whole goal is to group people together and buy bulk, and get people to buy bulk advertising, and then they divvy it up between the shows. And if you're on the network, you get a penny for every, you know, $800 that place makes, kind of thing. And they basically let people in just to let them in. It isn't like there's a litmus test. It isn't like you have to...
Quality doesn't really matter.
Right. And I feel like a huge percentage of the people that join those networks join them for one of two reasons. They think they're going to get more downloads, or they think they're going to make money.
Mm-hmm.
Those are not the reasons to podcast. That's just my personal belief. You do it because you want to do it, and you have fun doing it, okay? Hacker Public Radio, to me, is the essence of that. The big plus is there's no responsibility needed at all. You simply record the audio and send the audio. They do everything else.
Sure.
They actually have a semi-rigid schedule of shows being released Monday through Friday. There's like syndicated Thursday. Every Thursday is a show that is in normal syndication someplace else that they insert into there. They have repeat shows like Linux in the Shell with Double N Dan, where he takes a single Linux command and boom, expands on it and tells you all about it from soup to nuts. Has a video on his site about it, has a full write up on the site about it, a full write up about 1,000 times longer than most people's blog post. I mean, he goes into so much detail.
Right.
So at Hacker Public Radio, you have the opportunity to basically learn something or learn about something that someone else just wanted to talk about. So there's the reward for the podcaster is just, I just want to share this and record, and the reward for the listener is every day he doesn't know what he's going to get. It could be about soldering tips and techniques. It could be how to install WordPress. It could be about barefoot running. It could be about using your iPhone to hack into a network. And the beautiful thing is, any show that you don't like, you simply skip. And there's no harm, no foul, because you know tomorrow you're going to get another show.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thoroughly like that platform a lot. And I will say, it was fading hard like a year and a half, 2 years ago. A couple guys stood up and really took responsibility onto themselves to, we're going to make this good again. We're going to make this better again. And the guy's name who did it, in my eyes, was one of the main guys doing this, was Ken Fallon, who did put in to win the Raspberry Pi. He didn't win, but he gave a good effort. He came close. And he has a site, kenfallon.com. And if you take a look at kenfallon.com, and then it's active-lennox-podcast. He lists basically, and it's a work in progress, people. It's a work in progress. He is basically putting together a list of every Linux podcast. And by Linux, I don't mean from beginning to end, they talk about Linux. From beginning to end, they talk about free software, open source software, BSD, Unix, Linux. Anytime you can get the source code for something and edit it yourself kind of mentality.
He says the list is Linux/tech/security podcasts.
Yes, because security most of the time is Linux.
Yeah.
And a lot of, to be honest, cutting edge tech seems to be a little bit more Linux.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's Android devices, Raspberry Pis, Ouyas, the Android gaming platform kind of thing. And I will say, in my dog catcher, I probably do already subscribe to about 9 out of 10 of these. And I'll say, here's the example. Okay. Nightwise, I was on his cast, just got released a week or two ago. His cast is not a Linux podcast at all. His cast is, we're going to figure out how to make technology do the work. You sit back and you enjoy it. And he uses Windows, Mac, Linux, iOS, Android, anything, as long as it gets the job done. So there's a bunch of stuff on this list that is just tech-related, purely tech-related, like his show. And then, of course, you have stuff like Linux Trivia Podcast, which wasn't in my feed until yesterday. So I really encourage people, if it's content you want, it's content you get.
Sweet. Yeah. It's a good list.
Oh, yeah. And I will say, I don't think any one of these are no longer being done.
Well, that's why he says active.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, Linux Reality is the one that everybody really should listen to, but it isn't active, I digress. But every time I find a list like this, I hate the fact that I start to click through it, and by the time I get to the second or the third, it's a dead link.
Yeah.
So I really do thank him for keeping this up. Oh, and CC Hits, Creative Commons Music, and that's it. Steve, you need to subscribe to that one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, where every day you get a song. So once again, you have the carte blanche of just skipping it because you don't like it, or you can actually go to the site and, if you like it, vote on it.
Very cool.
And then at the end of the month, I believe they have a monthly, I think it's an hour-long show of just the best kind of thing.
Like somebody DJs it?
I don't know. I never listened to the hour-long. I have all these podcasts in my feed.
Well, you might have missed some Luke Fontaine and not even known it.
I probably did. Okay, now that was all a build-up basically for Hacker Public Radio, okay? Now, Ken Fallon, to be honest, in the last 6 months, I'd say, even though this is not 6 months, he has done two of my favorite Linux Hacker Public Radio podcasts, and one of them, Podnuts audiences need to listen to and understand, okay? There is no direct link to shows on Hacker Public Radio. the links goes directly to the MP3 file or OGG files, whatever. So I link to Ken's profile. Okay. Ken did one episode 1034 on July 19th called Pixie Boot, where he explains everything from soup to nuts about Pixie Boot, how he used it, how he basically didn't have a choice. This was the only way he could get an operating system on this box was to Pixie Boot. And he says how you can take advantage of it. I personally believe if you own your own shop and you have to do like reimaging of box or reinstallation of operating systems to any extent, and you're not taking advantage of Pixie booting, you are doing much, much too much work. Even if you have a Slipstream DVD, you're doing too much work.
Okay.
Pixie booting makes it much more hands-off and much more automated. Okay. The second show he did was July 10th, migrating away from Google Reader. I thought I would not care at all about this episode, okay? Which is why even when I think I don't care about it, I still listen to the first 10, 15 minutes to see if it's really something that I don't care about. And he went into a lot of detail about how you can, for free, on your own DoorDoorGeek.com or internally in your house on a server, you can set up this free software where you basically can export your Google Reader OPML file. You import it into this, and it becomes a mail thing where you basically now have your new email account. And instead of having a news reader, you have an inbox. And basically, instead of checking your news feed reader, you're checking a inbox. Which to
Why is that better?
Well, I like it because it already, to me, news feed readers already adhere to inbox mentality, which is you check it when you have time, you mark something as read if you already, then read it, you delete it if you don't want to see it anymore, you forward it if you want to share it with somebody, or you mark it as important if you want to keep it.
Exactly.
And that's
so why make an inbox?
Because that's what inboxes do. They do all that.
But I mean, why change that and make this inbox?
Well,
why make it more email-y?
Okay. I don't use Google Analytics. Here's my example. I use PoeWiki, whatever it's called. I can't even pronounce it. Because I like to get away from Google at times and see what else is out there. Google is not the end-all, be-all for everything. But they have so much stuff. It's so convenient. But you got to try once in a while. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try to do this and see if I can get away from Google Reader. The bad thing about Google is the only reason they offer these services is because they want to look in a little bit on my privacy and to get ad revenue, which mm-hmm. I can't blame them. But at the same time, that doesn't mean I have to use them. I can try something else.
Sure.
You know? So I thought this was really cool. I want to say the name of the software he was using. Oh, Feed2IMAP is what it's called.
Okay.
Not hard, not crazy, not insane. He shows you basically everything you have to do to set it up, and it's not hard. Huh. It really isn't hard.
Feed the number two or TO?
Feed the number two, IMAP.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and it's over at gna.org. Can't say I heard of that one.
Looks like Outlook Express.
You'll love it.
I used to love Outlook Express.
Dude, I did too. Right. I was in my prime with Outlook Express, I'm not going to lie, right at the beginning of XP. And I thought, I don't need anything else. This does everything.
It did its job pretty well. It didn't do much of anything else. In fact, I liked it better than Outlook because I didn't need all the other crap.
Exactly. Well, now the new Outlook, nudge, nudge, has a built-in RSS feed reader. So even Microsoft admits news readers are like email. And that's the
speaking of Microsoft, I did an episode, you guys aren't going to believe this, of My Hard Drive Died yesterday with Scott Moulton. And towards the end of the show, he talked about something that will probably enrage most Linux users. And it has to do with Microsoft being greedy. And you guys should check it out and listen to that as soon as I get it released, probably tomorrow. I wanted to say that, but this also reminded me of something else. We read some emails on that show for My Hard Drive Died. Guess how old these emails were that we read that were in my queue?
9 months.
Over a year.
Oh! Easy.
A year and a few, and like 5 months.
Well, okay. Did you purposely just leave us hanging and not tell us what he exactly said about Linux?
Yes.
Thanks, Steve. Well, next week on Linux for the Rest of Us, I will address this. And I will honestly be honest. He is one of the smartest guys I know. That does not mean everything he says is absolute. Once in a while, he lets feelings come in and phrases it as fact. I'll just say that.
I got you. Okay.
But I still would, if he says anything, I got to by default believe him.
Well, he was on the side of Linux. He wasn't for Microsoft.
Why would that enrage?
What's that?
You said it would enrage us.
It would enrage you. He was stating what I consider a fact. Okay. I mean, it sounded like a fact that he discovered about what Microsoft was doing that will enrage Linux users.
Oh, geez. Not good. Not good. Bomber. You know, you might want to get a bodyguard. I didn't say that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I definitely got to listen. And I encourage people, if you want to know anything about a hard drive, listen. And if you think you know stuff about a hard drive, you don't know jack until you listen to that show.
You really don't. You really don't.
Yeah.
You guys will enjoy it. I asked all my questions about SSDs to Scott, and he's just a fountain of information. He's really good.
Literally. I mean, the guy gets hired by the FBI to teach him how to do forensics.
He was just teaching New York City cops a couple months ago.
Oh, well. Forget about it. Okay, this next one, some users will hate this. I will say this right now. I believe the bulk of my audience will not hate this, but will in fact, what's the word? I don't want to say hug it. They will embrace it. Okay, this is over at iloveubuntu.net, which I'm sorry. I still think that's a horrible name of a domain, but I digress. They have this article there, and it's called Meet Create Launcher, Easy Example-Based Launcher Creation Tool. And that's the kicker, okay? Example-based. I only learn off of examples. Only. You can give me stats and facts about stuff, and I will never in my life be able to understand what it is. You show me an example of something, then I have to reverse engineer it to understand it, kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This one holds your hand in the creation process to where you don't have to reverse engineer it. It's there in plain English for you. Okay.
And what does it do?
Well, everybody on Windows knows how easy it is to create a desktop shortcut. You simply right-click, new, shortcut. You know where the stuff's at most of the time if you're even a mid-range user. And so, you know, doing that kind of stuff isn't hard. Did I lose the audio feed? In Linux, I'll just say it is not quite as easy. It definitely takes a little bit more work, partially because the paths to everything seems almost like black magic to a lot of people.
Sure.
Because they're used to see /\ program files, you know, and which isn't there. This tool basically helps you hold your hand in finding all the information out that you need to, and will give you options like start as root user, which in Windows you have to say run as. And I don't know about you, but I always had a little bit of issues with the run as command.
Yeah, I didn't use it too much.
I hated it. You can also say start with line, or you can actually choose NVIDIA Optimus settings. So custom graphic settings for this application as well.
Wow.
Yeah. If you want desktop shortcuts or you want shortcuts anywhere, okay, in your download folders, you want shortcuts, or documents folder, you want shortcuts to run something, you need this app. This app will honestly hold your hand through the creation process. And I will say, when it's done creating what it creates, if you open up your note, your text editor, file open, and go browse and open that shortcut up, then you'll see all the raw data for that file. And when I say all the raw data, it will probably be 5 or 6 lines of text combined, maybe 80 characters long, and it's all in plain English. So, you know, I encourage people to play with it. You know.
So, yeah, sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, because some desktops these days, like I believe GNOME Shell, you can't by default create desktop shortcuts. Some people live by desktop shortcuts. You know what I mean?
Totally. Yes.
I don't like having those people left out. So.
That's nice of you.
Well, somebody has to do it. Okay. Okay, this next thing, unfortunately, it's ilubuntu.net again.
Why don't you like it? Because it's so, like, cheesy hearts and stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, I like ubuntu.net. I use ubuntu.net. I love, love's a pretty powerful word here, man. Okay? It's like I was telling my son today. Hey, son, you're 7. You really don't comprehend the full implementations, I can't even say the word right, of the word hate. You really don't understand what that word really means, so I'm going to ask you to not use that word. You can say you don't like something, or you really don't like something, but please stop saying the word hate. Yeah,
that's a nice try, Dor.
Oh, I know.
I can't count the times I said hate when I was a kid.
Oh, I know, and honestly, I was the same way. I did not come to the realization about that word until I was like low 20s, maybe mid 20s. Because, you know, for me to say I hate that movie, you don't really hate that movie. You think it's worthless or stupid, right, or a waste of time, but hate, you know.
Hate. Is this strong? It's a strong word.
Yeah. So I really kind of asked him to just stop saying it, to which he
What did he say?
I didn't think it was that bad, Dad. I said, well, Billy, if someone said they hated you, what would you do? Shouldn't ask that question, because he immediately started tearing up. He's a sensitive fellow. I don't know where he gets it from. And I was like, dude, so you understand why I don't want you to say it about other people or things? Oh, man, I had no idea, Dad. So he said he's going to try to say it less. And typically when he says something like that to me, he really actually listened, which, you know, I'll take it when I get it.
That's great. He sounds like a smart kid.
Oh, he's pure gold. Pure gold. And a super quick 4-year-old story, my youngest son. Last Saturday, apparently they were up at like 6 o'clock. I let my wife sleep in because God bless her. I love her. She works hard. I got up around 7 o'clock. And they were both dressed. I thought, well, maybe she got up and got them dressed and went back to bed. I don't know. Around 6 o'clock that night, let's just say, my 4-year-old comes up to me and says, hey, Dad, you want to see my underwear? Sure. Why not? You want to show it? Go ahead. What do you got? He turned around and mooned me. And then he just went, mwah, ha, 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 and ran out of the room. He had no underwear on the whole day.
Do they not typically dress themselves?
We typically like throw clothes on the bed and tell them to get dressed. My oldest will dress himself. For some reason, he wants to wear pants every day. I'm like, dude, it's 98 degrees. Put on shorts. He'll wear pants, and then he'll wear, like, a shirt with no arms. Dude, that doesn't look right. Don't do that. Even I know that, and I can't dress myself.
That's funny.
But man. I digress. I digress. Okay. This next toy, iloveubuntu.net. I didn't even know if I wanted to bring... The only reason I'll say, because it's not your typical production app. It isn't a sound recorder. It isn't a video editor. It's not a word processor. It's not a browser. It's a, I guess, a note-taking app.
Okay.
But it really does try to ultra push organization and flexibility. Now, a lot of
Like Evernote?
I guess you could say Evernote, but to me, it looks a little bit more visually pleasing than Evernote, at least last time I used it, which was a year plus ago. It's almost like a journal, a digital journal, where anything you find interesting, whether it be a screenshot, a sound file, a text clip, a bookmark, or whatever, you can add to this list, and you can go back by date. Go back in time.
Wow, I kind of like this. What's it called?
My Shelf.
Okay.
Almost messed that one up. I will say, when I first looked at it, I thought, interesting. Okay. Different. I installed it, and I will say I like it. I can see using it. What the question for me is, how useful is it to pull data out? Like, can I use this as a note-taking tool for Linux or the rest of us between shows? You know?
And what did you find?
I don't know.
Is it easy to pull data out?
This coming week is the first week I'm doing it, because I still have 600 and plus links in my Gitpocket account. So I got to go through them.
And those are Linux for the rest of us show notes, basically? Those links?
There is a couple Android things in there, but gotcha. It's mainly Linux for the rest of us. I will say I like the filters and the view sizes choices. What it basically means is, like, you know, in a Google image result, you can increase or decrease the size of the thumbnails. You can do that with this, too. You can increase or decrease the size of the thumbnails that you're previewing. And the filters are very basic, but I think you don't really need a lot, because you have a tag search, you have a search. Then you can sort by modification date, show high priority ones kind of thing. It's interesting. I think,
yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think this app might slowly become popular, only because it fits a niche on Linux that I don't think a lot of other apps even pay attention to.
Right. I agree. It is good. It's very appealing.
Yeah. And just a quick note, we technically have a tornado warning right now, and I hear some nasty stuff coming out of that sliding glass door, some thundering.
Really?
Yeah.
You should move down to Florida, where that doesn't happen.
You get flash thunderstorms all the time.
It's really interesting.
See, you didn't say no.
We're on a lot of tangents this week. No, we do. Like, in fact, I could walk to CompUSA from my new place, actually.
Oh, wow.
So, you know. So I was at CompUSA, and it was raining on the other side of the parking lot. And that's the way it is in Florida. Like, you can literally avoid thunderstorms by just driving around them.
Well,
but here's the thing. Up in the Northeast, it's gloomy all day. If it's going to be cloudy that day, it's cloudy all day.
Not here. You don't like the weather in Maryland, wait a half hour.
Well, it wasn't like that in Philly. And here, it's like that. It's like in Maryland. You got a thunderstorm coming in, it just washes everything away. It washes your car. It's great. It just washes it, and it's gone. And the sun comes out again.
Yeah, I'll say, like, a third to half of the rainstorms between April and September, it's like it's still raining, but the sun's already out drying stuff up. And then, you know, like 2 minutes later, the rain stops. It's like typically rain is less than an hour or 2 hours, and it's done. You know?
That's odd. I cannot believe that it's like that there. That's really strange.
We're by the bay, hon.
I guess that's what it is.
I don't know. I'm just making stuff up. But because that's the old saying here, if you don't like the weather, wait a half an hour.
That's pretty cool. But okay. I digress.
I know. I do too. Okay. I wanted to just mildly focus on a couple games here because we haven't done games in a little bit. Okay. This first set of games is from alientrap.org, which you don't hear too many game makers saying they're from .org sites. But this one is. Okay. The first game that they have, a couple games. I don't know if they're all going to be Linux Mac friendly, but this one has a goal too. I think it's called Apothean. Apothean.
Apothean. Okay.
I don't know.
I would say Apothean, but that's just me.
I'll go for that. I'll just say it's Greek. And so the name's Greek to me. Yeah.
Wow, that's cool graphics.
That's the reason why I want to talk about this. They're not normal graphics. They're very, I don't want to say retro, because they look really sharp, but it's a side-scrolling game, so it's a retro style of game.
It's like Japanese kind of looking.
I'll go for that. I'll say it's a very differently looking game, I believe, because of the graphics, like the game Out of This World we talked about on Android App Addicts.
Yeah.
I believe because the graphics are, I don't want to say minimalistic, but it looks like they're almost static in a lot of the graphics, it should mean you should get really good performance out of this game.
Yeah, I agree.
And it looks like it's going to be release early 2013 for the PC, and they are working on Mac and Linux versions. So it's something to look forward to.
That's pretty neat. Very interesting looking graphics. Definitely yeah. Worth checking out.
Yeah, just interesting enough to catch my eye.
Yeah.
Okay, now for the game hub, okay? You know, if you're Xbox fan or whatever, I'm sure there's a couple podcasts out there that just focus on Xbox games, Xbox news, Xbox accessories, Xbox Red Rings of Death, and everything, you know. In Linux, I never knew of a hub that was up to date for Linux games. I found plenty of sites, but then I would look at the last date published on a thing and it would be 3 months ago or a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Ven Stone, who is on Google Plus, is the only guy I have seen who actually has a true passion on keeping up on games, period. Okay? And he's not, you know, 18 years old. You know, we're 18-year-old kid. That's all he does is play games. But he is an adult, and he does actually keep up to date with a lot of news, and he actually understands a lot of the behind-the-scenes things about games, whether it be engines, frameworks, architectures, all this kind of stuff. And over at Linux Gamecast, which I mentioned before, was ironic because there was no cast, now has a cast.
Really?
Yeah.
His URL is Linux Gamecast, but there was no cast?
There was no cast. And I will say, on the last episode, at least here, which it looks like it is episode OOE, which I believe is actually episode 5, because he's doing it in hexadecimal. That's geek for you. It's him, a guy named Zoke, X-O-K-E, who I can tell you is one of the coolest Linux guys, period. I've talked to him many times. His wife, Mrs. Zoke, she posts some really entertaining stuff on Google Plus. And they were also co-hosted by Sarah's, or Kevin, who has been on Linux Basics at least a dozen times, who is also passionate about games. So now there is a true Linux podcast about games, which in hindsight, I don't know, Ken Fallon had on there. If he doesn't, I'm going to have to ding him.
Yeah, there you go.
Because it is only episode 5, so, oh, he doesn't have it on there. I got him. Because I like helping Ken. If I can point out something that he doesn't know, I feel better. All that was for this. He profiled a game called Tombs of Metrophilices.
I'm trying to find it.
Dude, I can't even pronounce it. Well, if you go back to the notes.
Yeah, I'm in the was it in this Google Plus stream, or where's the notes?
No, just go back.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. All right, it is. Tombs of... Get out of here. Why would you call a... Where would you call a game that? Tombs of Mephistopheles.
Yes.
Mephistopheles.
Cool, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he highlighted this game, and I will say, I'm now going to play a little bit of games. And this game, to me, looked like it could have be the kind where I just jump in, play for 5-10 minutes, and jump out, and have fun. This is a Linux game put out by Cod in Action or something. I don't know. I never heard of them before. First-person-esque game where you're running around, at least in the demo that he's previewing, with a sword in your hand. You know, how could it not be cool?
It looks good.
Yeah. Well, I will say, I have good hardware, really good hardware. Ben Stone has better hardware. Oh, my Lord. He was telling me about his hardware months ago. It's insane.
Really?
Yeah. And I will say this game looks very graphically pleasing.
It does. So you're a skeleton.
Oh, he just shot some magic there at the end.
So you're a skeleton?
Sure.
Okay, cool.
I'll go for that.
I'm looking at the screenshot. I didn't play the video.
Right. It is right now. System requirements, XP, Vista 7 or Linux. CPU 2.0 plus gigahertz dual core. GF8600 or Radeon 2600 with 512 megs of VRAM, which I don't think is a lot. And 2 gigs of RAM. So it isn't like you need a crazy amount of power. I will say this game is technically in the alpha funding stage where you can pre-purchase it. So it's not a done game. It's not, you know, ready to be sold, but it is being produced.
That's really cool. I like this game.
Yeah, to me it looks good enough. I can get behind it, and I honestly, I don't expect Ben to listen to this show. Either way, I can't thank him enough for constantly reminding me about good-looking games on Linux, because everybody has this preconceived notion that the games look horrible. You're going to be playing Solitaire or Spider Solitaire the whole time, or you're going to have to load some Windows variant of a game, or, you know, Steam. Everybody keeps thinking Steam is it. Without Steam, we don't have games.
Right, exactly.
Follow Venstone on Google Plus. You will have plenty of games.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, and I might pre-purchase that one. Okay. This is technically Android, but you gotta listen to the end of it, people. Okay. Over at Linux on, well, I guess you don't have to, you just listen to the beginning of it. Over at linuxonandroid.blogspot.com. This guy...
Blogspot.com.
I know. I didn't say it was a tremendously great site.
I mean, it doesn't... that shouldn't really affect the content. Oh, but does, I'm just saying.
It does. Oh. It's a judgment call. It's like you walk up to your boss, your new boss at work, and he has two different color socks on. What are you supposed to think? Okay? But I digress. Okay. This blog site, because it's obviously a blog, because it's on Blogspot, they've made it their goal to try to get Linux or Linux applications or Linux executables or full-blown Linux on as many Android devices as possible to any level. Even if it's just you can install BusyBox and you get a whole new command set, or it's actually rooting the bootloader and getting Linux actually installed on a device, which there's only a few of them. But he's basically putting out a call for Nexus 7 owners or soon-to-be owners to basically help be testers and help him get stuff running on a Nexus 7. I will say, I'm a Nexus 7 owner. Too bad I'm not an XDA forum member, because I hate those forums and I can't stand the people in them, but they have good links. Okay. So I'm going to go through this.
You said hate. You shouldn't use that word, Dorf.
I despise that site. Because if you just join Dollars to Donuts, you can't post in this topic because you don't rank, because you're not important enough.
Really?
Yeah. You use all kinds of weird ranking systems.
Nah, that's weird.
Right. I know.
I hate that.
Yeah. I'm not calling you out on it, Steve. But I will say I like the idea of this, even if it's just a VM running on the back of the Nexus 7. As long as it's polished and done right, it can still be very useful and functional. It might not be as useful and functional as a native install, but you got to take your something when you get them. I don't know. Something like that.
It worked. Good. You fit any word you want in there.
That's what she said last night. sorry. But I will say, if you had are at all interested on actually getting Linux installed on an Android device, do not go into the Google Play Market and search for install Linux. 99% of the time, you're paying for something that will just is nothing more than a step-by-step tutorial saying, step one, go here, go here, go here, go here. Step two, go here, go here, go here, go here.
Really?
Yeah, that's all they are. This guy, if you go through the entire site and looking at it, he will give you complete step-by-steps with links on how to do everything that you want to do.
And for free.
For free. He doesn't care. He's just giving it away.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, and I will say he has a long list of devices on the top of the site that you can click on and look at. A lot of it is Ubuntu on all kinds of stuff from Amazon Kindle Fire, Asus ePad Transformer, Asus Nexus 7, Transformer Prime, Barnes & Noble, Nook Tablet, Nook Color, and on and on and on and on and on. This guy's done a lot of homework.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Very cool. Okay.
I say somebody buys him some web hosting and a real and get that domain. That's how I would like to assist him.
I would like to, too. I got to assist other people first. Okay. This next thing is only touchy-feely, okay? There's no hard facts in this next link, and I mean zero hard facts. But it's good to read just to give you good ideas and guidelines, I'll say, okay? Tracy Holtz was on a couple weeks ago, maybe eight, I don't know. And he mentioned about small, low powered servers.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to build a small, low powered server with the help of Tracy Holtz, which I'm going to expect to be less than $200 and be able to do everything that, you know, one of those like $500 appliances can do kind of thing. Of course, less hard drive space because I'll build up to it. To me, this was a very good article. They actually tell you how to take an old laptop, their example, and make it into a functional server. At the same token, if you read into this, you can see how basically you can get a bunch of old laptop drives and take the drives, keep the sleeve on it, and you can actually make yourself a NAS server with nothing but laptop drives.
Really?
Yeah.
Pretty wild.
Yeah.
This is at techradar.com, how to build a low power server.
Right. And to be honest, like you said pre-show, I don't know if you said it. No, you said it on the show. The best thing about a laptop, using a laptop, is it has its own battery backup.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know how much a battery backup unit costs, right, Steve?
Sometimes as much as a laptop.
If you get one with a 30-minute charge in it kind of thing, you're going to pay about $100 probably. Your laptop has multi-hour built-in battery backup, you know?
Yeah.
So I am a fan of doing that kind of thing.
Plus, it's slim.
Yeah. Well, literally, I remember Steve D talking in a Podcast Daily about having shelves just big enough for a laptop, the charger, and something else. So there's a little bit of room between it. I can personally see drilling holes in the side of that thing for Ethernet adapters and power to be ran through there and have just shelves where they're all different servers.
That's wild. It's a wild idea.
I know, and I'm like, I have a couple laptops sitting here. Well, and here's the real thing I like about this article. They give you glossy 1,000-foot view of hardware and hardware ideas, but they actually go into detail about the software, okay? They say to download Ubuntu Server. I'm not going to tell you not to use Ubuntu Server, because if there's anything that I want people to understand is Linux is Linux is Linux. It doesn't matter if you download a desktop distribution. It doesn't matter if you download a server distribution. It almost doesn't matter if it's an RPM-based or a dev-based or a Slackware-based or whatever-based. 99% of the software you can install on any one of them. So don't be picky. For newer users, Ubuntu is the way to go, my belief. Okay.
Okay.
They tell you how to install Samba, how to the basics of configuring Samba. They tell you how to use Tangerine Media Sharing, which is a iTunes compatible, like in iTunes, you can share your library out to a device. If you download and install the Tangerine Media Sharing application to that same device, it would appear like the exact same type of protocol, the exact same type of system. So that's good. They also talk about MediaTomb. MediaTomb, I believe, is much more of a DLNA PlayStation 3 style sharing over the network.
Okay.
And they go into even how to put remote desktop software on that server so you can remote into it if you need to do work.
Sweet. And this is, again, a laptop server.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Which just to me means simple, solid, basic, secure. You know, it's good.
Slim.
And if you want to, you can pull a Jonathan they do and have three or four different hard drives that you can boot up to have different services. Well, tonight I'm going to watch some UFC, so I need my UFC hard drive. And you put it in, you boot to it. And then tomorrow night I need my audio, so I'm going to put in. And you could literally have different configured systems. You just switch out the hard drive.
That's pretty wild.
Okay, I'm only going to touch on this because I did not read it. I'm not a reader. Okay. I know. I should read some. I know one thing. It doesn't have the word hate in the article. Okay. iFixit.org, which I know you have to know of, Steve.
I've heard of it.
Well, come on. Believe it or not, I'm...
Oh, dude.
I couldn't help it. I'm sorry.
Touché.
Well, I know Sean Johnsoni, I believe this was it, iFixit. He basically said, it isn't just whatever. You really can learn how to fix insane numbers and quantities of stuff, okay?
And yeah, it means I as in not Apple I.
Well, I do believe initially it might have been iPod focused, but they've just blown up. They do everything now. Xboxes, TiVos, everything.
Huh.
Well, what I didn't know was they also do basically blog-type postings, especially since they have a big button at the top that says the blog, go figure. okay, they do a brief overview and a little bit of details about Robert Litt. Robert Litt is a sixth-grade teacher at Ascend, which is a small arts K through 8. So 5-year-olds through 13-year-olds. Okay. I personally believe that is the perfect age range to introduce different operating systems. Now, personally, I think a school should have a Windows-focused class, a Mac-focused class, and a Linux-focused class, because if the kid is actually going to be into technology, he could very easily run into all three.
Oh, yeah.
In his day-to-day. And basically what this guy did with zero money, bing, dang zero money, he was able to get donated computers and use GNU Linux to basically make a a computer lab.
Yeah.
And in this computer lab, you can easily see towards the bottom, there's at least 20 computers in here, and the obvious part that's donated is every monitor's a different shape and size.
Yeah, some are CRTs, but they look great in the lab.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. He's now up to over 70 computers. And because he's using GNU licensed software and operating systems, he does not have to pay any license fees, which means the labs are free to grow as much as the hardware he has and as much as the students want to learn. I personally believe this country is in it is approaching an even more drastic financial crisis where government institutions, and especially schools, are going to have to make a very hard choice. They're going to need to save money. You can't keep firing people, and you can't keep giving pay cuts. Sooner or later, you're going to hit a brick wall. You know, there's only so much you can cut. I believe they're going to have to slowly become more focused on GNU-licensed operating systems and software. And to me, this guy is ahead of the curve.
Totally. I agree. He's all over it. And it's a great idea. It's so cheap.
Yeah. And I'll say, and here at the bottom they say, Robert advocates open source software, of course, even for schools that aren't lacking in tech. The U.S. government reports and says that the digital divide is shrinking, at least in schools. 97% of teachers have at least a single computer in the classroom.
Huh.
That's a lot of money that they could be voluntarily having to give Microsoft, Apple, whoever.
Totally.
And like I said, you do have to have Microsoft computers around. You do have to have Mac computers around, in my eyes, to really teach the students everything. But where you don't have to have them, do we really have to have them? I mean, you know, I digress.
I agree. I mean, in a lab where you're in a spot where you're going to be doing like word or, you know, word processing or graphics or some task that doesn't, it's not operating system centric, you don't need it.
Right.
So,
and
there's a video down here at the bottom of the site of Robert Litt on building a computer lab for free. I didn't watch it, but there you go. There's like, it looks like he's talking about what he did.
Yeah, he looks like me. He's not a shave. And no, I'm not going to be clean shaven for OLF. And he has his laptop sitting on top of a ladder. Now, that's the sign of a man using his resources around him.
And it doesn't look like a newer laptop. No. Looks like it's actually an IBM ThinkPad.
An actual IBM. Exactly.
Yeah, an IBM thing. Yeah, exactly.
Right. I want to, again, divulge for a second. Okay. Very cool guy on Google Plus, Randy Noseworthy. Besides graciously pledging to my Kickstarter, he posts a lot of interesting things on Google Plus. And one of the things he responded to this is, what I don't understand, and this is a really hard question for a lot of people to answer, how can I take this knowledge that I have about open source and about networking and about imaging and about hosting and about configuring and about installing and about supporting and make it into a career? I hate to say it like this, but it's easy. It's a dirty word, though. The word's consulting. Okay? There's no other career I know of in the computer world that's looked down upon by the quote-unquote true techs than consulting, because typically consultants don't do anything. They come in and say, you need to do this and this and this and this. Give me my money. And, you know, somebody else has to do all the quote-unquote legwork. I believe there is a career, maybe a future career, not right now, solid career, in implementing and designing and architecturing open source solutions for companies where they seriously only hire you on as a consultant. Now, granted, you could get a retainer fee where you say, I'll come in to your network 2 hours every month and just check it up on it. And if you need extended help, service, or support, you know, it's going to be billed at this much per hour, per month, or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I will say it's going to be a hard business to crack into because you need to have a lot of charisma. You got to have the gift of gab. You have to be able to explain things in ways that the straight executives can understand that, yes, this is going to save you a lot of money. Yes, this is a lot of work, too. You can't just flip a switch. And right. Tomorrow we're free software. Whee! No. Okay? You actually have to organize, plan, develop the plan, lay out the plan, modify the plan, and implement slowly over a little bit of time. That's where a consultant can make big bucks because time is money. If you say it's going to take 3 months, well, that's 3 months you're going to basically be hired like a contractor.
Right.
So I don't know of another way in my eyes to turn this type of knowledge into a career, and Randy does listen to the cast, so I want to thank him for listening to the cast. Yeah, that's a cool guy. I personally believe that is a avenue, and if I'm right or if I'm wrong, or if you think I'm right or wrong, anybody, doordoorgeek@gmail.com. Because, you know.
There you go.
I don't know. Okay. Throw out one last quickie. One of the things I despise about a lot of Android software is Android is Linux, but 99% of the software you have to use is Windows. You know, if you want to connect to it, if you want to send files to it, if you want to, you need Windows, and it drives me absolutely up a wall because it's almost like Google and the app people have to go out of their way to make Windows work with it.
Right.
Instead of using the easy route, I'm using Linux. I don't want to get to that. But what I will say, there's an application called ZipWhip. ZipWhip.
ZipWhip.
ZipWhip. I meant to say that. And you can download this for Windows, Mac, or Linux. This is basically text messaging from your computer using your existing mobile number.
Wow.
Okay. So what essentially means is on every computer you use during the day, you just need to have this installed, and you never have to worry about hearing the notification sound and having to get up and go across the room and drag down the phone and figure out what's going on. And,
right.
You know, oh, it's just this stupid Papa John's thing harassing me about a coupon, you know. And it's truly cross-platform, which means you can go to your brother's house and install on his Mac under an account he doesn't even know exists. You know, you can go to your parents' house and install it on their Windows 8 horrible we can't call it Metro anymore interface computer in the near future. And they don't even know it exists because Metro, they can't figure out their way around it. And then you can come home and put it on your Linux computer and you can have access to it the whole time. So I thought it was cool.
That is very cool. I love ways to implement texting into your computers.
Well, I hate saying it. It's only more. I mean, when, you know, back in the 90s, if a kid texted 300 times a month, the parents would want to go have him see a shrink or something. Oh, it's entirely too much. He's not talking to people. He's sitting there with that thing and just texting 300 times. You know, now there are kids that text, you know, 3,000 in a month.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
So if you like it or hate it, whatever, it's only going to become more popular, seemingly.
I think any communication is good communication. So, It's I like texting. I like what the internet is doing for communication. It's actually a good thing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, bottom line, we as a people have never had the ability to communicate with so many people before.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's a good thing. In most cases.
Well, even if they're people you don't want to communicate with, you could.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, man. Awesome stuff.
Thank you. That
is the end of the notes.
Did we get close to an hour?
Yeah, you're way over. Anyway, let me read two emails here. Then I got to hook up my cell phone to my audio interface. So after these emails, if you could entertain the folks for like a minute, I'll get that set up.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, thanks. This first email is from Joel, and he says, "Hey, Dor, I heard talking about buying a thin client for your house for $80 each. Why not check out the Raspberry Pi thin client project and get your geek on?" And it's at rpitc.blogspot.com.au. "I've been thinking about doing the same thing myself. Thanks for the show, and good luck with your new machines. Cheers, Joel." What do you think?
Yes and no. The problem is, when you buy the Raspberry Pi, you only get a bigger board. If you want to make it spousal approval and kid safe, you have to spend what turns out to be $40 for the Raspberry Pi because of shipping. And then at least $20 to $30 more on a case. So you're already up to $70-something dollars.
I see.
With the ones that we talked about a couple weeks ago that were $80, technically speaking, more RAM, more powerful than the Raspberry Pi.
Raspberry Pi is already old news.
Well, it's not already old news. It has its place. To me, it's more of a mobile solution or a niche solution, where to run a full desktop, you really do need at least a little bit of graphic processing power, and network speed are really the only two things I know that you really need to have. And the Pi's graphic processing power is not fantastic. I think it can be used until it comes with a case and it's less than $50. It's hard to say no to the $80 choice, but I did see that remote desktop Raspberry Pi. It looks very functional. I will say it looks more functional than I thought it would. And I like the Pi.
You can't get cases on eBay for like $2 like you can with cell phones?
Yeah, $2, $25 shipping.
I mean, even with that. I mean, I bought stuff on eBay for like $2 with no shipping or with free shipping. Cell phone cases, I mean, stuff on Amazon. There's nothing out there yet for the Pi?
Honestly, I haven't looked for a couple weeks. I think when I looked last time, they were still a little bit hot. So they were pricing them a little bit high. On Amazon, I don't think I saw any Raspberry Pi cases, which shocked me. The only case I saw was literally Amazon.co.uk, and they wanted $30 for the case.
Damn, we should go into the business. We'll make them out of, well, you have an old iPhone case, don't you there? Why don't you just make them out of iPhone cases?
Sure. Yeah, see, I mean, I go to Amazon.com, I search Raspberry Pi case, and I get a hard zip carrying case, a SanDisk SD card, a wireless and nano USB. That's nice.
Yeah, I wonder if people are actually searching for it. Well, they probably are.
And then I go down and I see our Arduino boards, box for Arduinos, Android mini PCs, Raspberry Pi user guide book.
Huh.
And the first Raspberry Pi case I see is $19.
Nomad Computer Pair in the chat says Legos for the win. That's a good call.
I'm not going to lie. I can't steal my kid's Legos, man. I can't do it. I can't. I can't bring myself to open his room.
I wouldn't do it either.
I mean, even
I would
if
buy
he's,
my own.
Even if he's sleeping, you know, I just can't do it. I will admit I am slightly afraid of using Legos because they melt. And it isn't that the Raspberry Pi gets hot, but I think it's warm enough to where it could distort stuff. And I'm the kind of person, if I don't check something every day, I will never check it. And I don't want to, you know, walk by it 5 months later and see a blob of plastic with a Pi encased inside of it, and I can't do anything more with it.
Maybe there's a way to mount it on the certain points, you know, like so it's got some air in there.
Yeah, and I'll say this $19 one on Amazon, I don't really like what I'm looking at.
Yeah, there's definitely a market for that, I think.
I will say anyway, there is absolutely a market for a low-cost quality case.
Yeah.
I'll pay for it.
All right, maybe I'll look into that. All right, next email is from Paul. Oops, Google door hit your Google Plus.
Oh.
It's going to come up soon, probably. Anyway, Paul says, until Linux becomes compatible with... Wait, well, the subject line is, why Netflix has a limited audience. Paul says, until Linux becomes compatible with media streamers and downloads, it will be a niche product. Netflix, for example, uses something like 25 to 30% of bandwidth is not compatible with Linux. What was that?
That was thunder.
My gosh. That was loud.
Yeah, but yeah, but in a half hour, it'll be fine out.
Yeah, right. He says, also, closer to home, Linux will not work with Overdrive, the product that downloads library audio, EPUB, and Kindle materials. While I like Linux, and after minimal fiddling can get it to work, I continue to need access to my mainstream operating systems. Nice podcast. Thanks. Paul.
I ain't gonna argue with him. But the kicker is, you have DVD players that play Netflix. You have Nintendo DSs that play Netflix. You have Rokus that play Netflix. You already have Linux playing Netflix. There's no plausible reason for people not to be able to install it on their desktop.
I agree. That's a very valid point, man.
Yeah, and I mean, my Wii can play it. My Nexus 7 can play it. My Kindle Fire can play it.
Why don't they have it on there?
They have never said absolute, here's why, or why not kind of thing. What people believe is they're having Silverlight. A hard time locking down a DRM. Well, no, they don't. They haven't used Silverlight for like 2 years.
Okay.
But they have been piggybacking off of encryption built into whatever they're already using.
I see.
I believe they have never developed their own encryption. And supposedly they're developing their own encryption, and they have to do that on Linux.
I see. All right. Hey,
they have to do that to be able to be ran on Linux.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Let me grab my phone, which has the voicemails. Can you give me a minute? You want to entertain the folks?
Yeah. I'll
be right back.
Okay. If anybody out there is interested in web development in Drupal, I highly encourage you to send me an email at doordoorgeek@podnuts.com, over at dev.linuxbasics.com. We are basically starting a community build of our website, and this is a developer site, but we're looking for input on how should we do it? How should it look like? But at the same time, we want to share everything we learn. So if you want to learn about it, I think that's a good interactive way to learn the basics of Drupal and how to get stuff done. And I don't think Steve's back yet. I will say I have now almost all of those podcasts from Ken's list all on my device now, which means I got literally like 12 plus hours to catch up on. And I want to ask people, don't forget Podnuts forums, podnuts.com/forums, easy answers and questions.
Okay, I am back, but loading up the voicemail now. This one's, I think, is going to be from Cody. Sorry I didn't get to this one last week, Cody. I'm still going a little crazy with my move,
right?
But I finally got all my stuff in practically, and here we go. This is a message from Cody. Let me make sure it's recording into my audio program, and I think it is downloading now with my new 4G LTE. And here we go. I'm so psyched about that. Here we go.
Hey guys, Linux to the rest of us. This is Cody Cooper calling. Hey, I just wanted to congratulate you on 100 episodes. I've listened to every single one of them, almost all of them on time. I've watched a lot of the live shows. I'm happy to say that it's been a wonderful ride. I know you guys will do many more. I cannot even begin to tell you exactly what I've learned from the show, but more importantly, I've gained quite a few friends, not only through you guys involved on the show, but it's a community that you've helped to create and they continue to expand and help us all grow our knowledge and our understanding of Linux and many other areas of tech. So thank you very much. In fact, without this show, I wouldn't properly know how to say Ubuntu. Thanks, Gene. Thanks, guys. Take care, and let's go to 500. Bye-bye.
That's awesome. I take it if you heard it, everybody in the chat heard it too. I'm impressed, Cody, that you remembered Gene.
Mm-hmm.
That's taking us back a little bit.
Oh, yeah, Gene was upset, too.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Cody. This show started all because of Dor. I want you guys to know that. And it's been a fun ride doing the show with him, but it was his brainchild. And I said, sure, let's do it. And we did it, and we're having fun doing it, and people seem to like it. So that's what we got. But thanks very much, man, on acknowledging us for that. Yeah. Dor, well done on doing 100.
Oh, honestly, I'm not trying to sound... I know, just saying that makes me sound dumb. I'm not trying to sound dumb. It's just another number. I take no joy in saying, putting a stake in the ground, I've done 100. Because my only goal is to come on next week. And come on next week. And come on next week. My goal is to not to be able to say, this is season 11, episode 1, just to confuse people so they really don't know how many shows I've done. To just keep stuff simple, this is episode 100. If you want to know how many shows I did, that's how many shows I did. And if you want to go back and listen to them all, God bless you. I'll just warn you, there were growing pains involved in this.
In this show?
Oh, yeah. When we first started, it was a little clunky, I think.
Yeah, we got, once it got wheels, actually, I don't remember it ever being clunky, but it's fine now. And I think it was fine before. So I think it's good, man. You keep bringing it. You know, if we actually measure the words said per episode, you've definitely trumped me in this show.
Well, it is a contest, but, Steve.
Yeah, I know. It's not a contest, but I mean, I just want to let everybody know that you bring the goods. I just show up at the mic, and that's my job.
Well, you know, don't sell yourself short, Steve. You are the John Madden, I'm the Pat Summerall kind of thing. I don't know. That didn't make any sense. Let's just go on.
Yeah, it's good enough.
I don't know, because...
I gotta say one thing about Pod.
That summer I was a drunk, so never mind.
the way Pod Nuts just happened was I was the same way. I just kept thinking, put out the content, do the next show, and then you look back, and all of a sudden you're at 100 episodes of whatever show you're doing. It's just like the stable thing in my mind was not let's make money. It was not how many people are listening. It was just. Put out more content. That was my stable method of thinking, and it was just like, it works. Putting out content is good. So, it's all about the content.
Well, yeah, and I won't lie, when I first noticed that we were getting close to 100,
damn.
I literally went back and checked to make sure we didn't, like, accidentally skip 30 shows or something. Because it didn't seem like 100 shows to me.
Yeah, I know. It did go by pretty fast. You know, I've been putting this next one off just because I haven't had it set up, and my other phone wouldn't play OGG for some reason, my Evo. But Ken O'Brien, I don't know what his official post is here.
He's not the chair, we know that.
The couch.
Yeah.
He's the publicity director for Ohio Linux Fest. Sent a file here. It's a 60-minute promo, so I'm going to play that because... Oops. I just dropped it. I'm going to play that so you guys can hear it and be more interested in going to OLF. Here we go.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition. Liftoff.
We are counting down to the 10th annual Ohio Linux Fest. Join us in Columbus for a weekend jam-packed with your favorite open-source software. On Friday, get professional training at Ohio Linux Fest Institute, or come to see the Early Penguins Talks. Saturday brings a full set of presentations, including the new Beginner's Track. Don't forget to stop by the display booths featuring prominent vendors and community projects. Sunday wraps up with LPI and BSDA certification exams, as well as the Diversity and Open Source Workshop. It all happens September 28, 29, and 30 at the Greater Columbus Convention Center. Visit ohiolinux.org for all the details.
And there you have it.
Very cool.
Thank you, Kevin. It was Kevin O'Brien. Did I say Ken?
I think
you Ken
said
Fallon
Ken.
On the mind.
I was going to let it go.
Kevin, thank you for sending that. Good promo. And heck, a bunch of us are going to OLF. You guys should go too.
Good times.
All right. Yeah. So that's what I hear. Some lipstick involved. Arthur says, so I have an SSD RAID array running in RAID 0, just two drives, but that's all the storage I have on my system. I was wondering, as I've heard you talk about Linux wearing out SSDs quite fast, if I should switch to Linux, as I'm not too happy with Windows, would that kill my drives much faster?
I never said that.
It's from Arthur.
I never said that.
Yeah, I don't know who said that either.
I never said that. I will say 99.9% of Linux installers do not even attempt to detect if you have an SSD and then quote-unquote properly configure your drive. I will say, because Linux does not need to be defragged, unless you get like 98% filled drive, but that alone makes the life expectancy longer versus a Windows computer, even if the Windows computer does configure correctly for an SSD. So that's the number one big thing.
I see.
I will say, in the last show, before last show, episode 99, I believe, I did link to an article with like four or five steps. I know. With like four or five steps that if you are running Linux, you should do to optimize the life and the utilization of your SSD drive. Only two of them pertain to extending life. One of them was disabling trim. Don't ask me what trim is, but supposedly it's a really beneficial thing to disable.
Beneficial thing to disable.
I'm 99% sure to disable trim.
Okay. I'm not 100% sure what trim is. I know I talked about it with Scott, but then I think I immediately forgot.
Well, Scott will then, trust me, if you bring it up to him, he'll say, I don't understand why Linux doesn't automatically do this, because it's easy.
Huh. Yeah. Damn, Dor, are you okay over there?
It hasn't started flooding yet, so I guess I'm okay.
That's crazy thunder. Oh my gosh!
I just had a twinkle of the lights, and I looked out the front door, and all I saw was bright lightning.
Really?
Yeah.
There's nor'easters, man. They'll get you every time. Yeah, don't have them down here.
Wife just hit me off on the intercom, but...
Do you got to go?
No.
You want me to read another email, or should we end off here before you explode?
Let's save it for next week.
Okay.
I hope my car windows are rolled up.
Okay. All right, we're going to end off here. That's it for the emails for this week. We've got three more. We're going to read them next week. And if you want to send more, send them to mail@podnuts.com. If you want to send it straight to Dor, send it to doordoorgeek@podnuts.com. If Dor is still there next week and his house is in one piece. Or doordoorgeek@gmail.com. Whatever you guys want. We got options here. Dor, you want to say anything to the folks before we end off?
Stay dry.
Okay. That's going to be it for this week, guys. Wow, that's loud. And see you next time.